The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Patricia for the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next hour, I will be reading to you from Time Magazine. Today's program is underwritten by G. Suggs Insurance. Please contact G. Suggs Insurance, your local independent agency, for trusted advice on home, auto, business, and life insurance. For more information, please visit gsuggsinsurance.com. That is gsuggsinsurance.com. Or call 919-875-8889. Today's edition of Time Magazine is dated November 6, 2023. As usual, it is bordered in red on the front cover with a narrow white inner border. Time is in large capital block lettering in a blue-green-gray muted tone upon a darker blue-green-gray muted tone background. The hostage nightmare is the caption on the front cover. The enduring trauma of the October 7 massacre. In the top right-hand corner of the front cover, it says our 100th year, in an area where one might find a thumbprint from turning the page. Beginning with The View in Box, the D.C. Brief by Charlotte Alter, senior correspondent. Allie Phillips never wanted to be a politician, but she had always wanted to be a mom of two. When Phillips found out she was pregnant in November 2022, her five-year-old daughter, Adelie, was thrilled, too. Her eyes got big, and her jaw just dropped open, Phillips says. She and her husband planned to name the baby Miley Rose. But after a scan when she was around 19 weeks pregnant, doctors told Phillips the fetus had problems with several organs. Conditions not compatible with life outside the womb, a doctor told Phillips. Miley Rose would likely die before birth. The longer Phillips stayed pregnant, the worse her own health could become. Phillips, who lives in North Tennessee, could not get an abortion in her home state. After the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, Tennessee enacted one of the strictest abortion bans in the nation. Phillips and her husband had to travel almost 1,000 miles to get one. Shortly after she returned, she was approached by the Center for Reproductive Rights, which represents patients denied medically necessary abortions. She also met with her state representative, Republican Jeff Burkhart, to ask his help writing a law expanding abortion options for parents in situations like hers. When Phillips told him about her pregnancy loss, he said, "I thought women could only have a miscarriage in their first pregnancy," she recalls. Burkhart did not respond to Time. The lack of knowledge, the lack of education is astounding. That's when she began to think about running for his seat. It may be an uphill battle. Donald Trump won the county by double digits in 2020, but abortion bans have reshuffled politics, even in conservative areas. Health Matters by Jamie Ducharme, health correspondent. After more than 3 years of covering COVID-19, I have essentially become a human search engine for friends and family who have questions about the virus. And during this ongoing wave of infections, I've been struck by how many people are still wondering if and for how long they need to isolate if they get sick. In fact, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's CDC policy has not substantially changed since late 2021. Its guidance still says anyone who tests positive for COVID-19 should isolate themselves from others, including those in their household, for at least 5 full days. During that period, the sick person should skip in-person school or work, avoid other public places, and if possible, stay away from others at home. If that is not an option, the CDC suggests wearing a high-quality mask, such as an N95 or KN95, when around others. After their 5 days of isolation are up, the CDC recommends the person with COVID-19 wear a mask for an additional 5 days if they have to be around other people indoors. That is because studies show many people remain contagious for longer than 5 days. COVID is not the flu, says Caitlin Jetalina, an epidemiologist who regularly interprets COVID-19 research in her popular newsletter. We remain far more contagious for longer with COVID. How do you know if you are still contagious? Alyssa Belinsky, an assistant professor of health policy at the Brown University School of Public Health, says at-home tests are often more useful indicators than simply counting the number of days you have stayed home. Studies suggest at-home test results correlate pretty closely with contagiousness, so a positive result means you could infect others, and a negative result means you likely will not. False negatives are possible, though, so Jetalina recommends testing multiple times if you can. The CDC considers a pair of negative results received 48 hours apart the sign you can remove your mask, even if it has not been a full 10 days since you got sick. It is wise to keep that guidance in mind as we head into winter illness season. From the world heading, Loved Ones by Carl Vick. Across 75 years, Israel has built itself around a military so formidable in battle that the country qualifies as a warrior state. But for the 2,000 years before that, the story of the Jews was one of perseverance through persecution, flight, and the kind of intimate house-to-house slaughter Israelis awoke to on the morning of October 7. What Hamas recorded on smartphones and uploaded to social media was a 21st-century pogrom. The massacre of more than 1,400 people renewed and validated the dread that resides in every Jewish Israeli as a kind of inheritance, the embedded collective memory of trauma that's kept a society's sense of confidence eggshell thin, even behind the most powerful fighting force in the Middle East. What that military is directing onto the Gaza Strip, 6,000 bombs in the first 6 days, had by October 17 killed more than 3,000 people. For Palestinians, the Israel-Hamas war is likely the worst trauma since the Nakba, or catastrophe, as they refer to the 1948 victory of the Jewish army, that in establishing a Jewish homeland exiled more than 700,000 Arabs who claimed the same land. Their descendants' defiant presence in blockaded Gaza, where 2.2 million people are ruled by Hamas, and on the West Bank, where 3 million chafe under Israeli military occupation, has posted a persistent challenge, not only for Israel's security, but also for the moral code cultivated during the millennia that Jews had not a state, but a tradition. Revenge hangs in the air over Gaza, along with cordite. And just as no Gentile can apprehend the horror of the October 7 Sabbath, nothing can communicate the experience of bombardment. Imagine enduring both the roughly 200 hostages Hamas carried away at gunpoint were awakened at dawn by the terror of a missile onslaught and faced the darkness of Gaza beneath the thunder of Israeli munitions. They form a kind of human bridge between two realms. I can only hope she's being held in Gaza, says the son of 74-year-old Vivian Silver, a peace activist missing from her kibbutz. What a terrible hope that is. With power cut off by Israel, accounts of the profound suffering in Gaza are largely being told from a distance. And in a conflict that's always been about competing narratives, Hamas ensured that attention would be on the hostages and their loved ones. The families speak wrenchingly about what they know and the torment of what they do not. Searching for hope, they find themselves at the mercy both of terrorists and of the intelligence apparatus of an Israeli government that failed them October 7, then ignored them in the chaotic days that followed. But they have their fellow citizens. After the worst loss of Jewish lives since the Holocaust, it was Israelis, the legions, rising to donate blood, to prepare food, to report for duty, who confirmed why their nation exists. I shall read a short biography of one of those hostages. I am not up to date on which ones have been released and which are still being held captive, but this is one that is printed in the November 6 edition of Time magazine, as told to Yasmin Serhan. The only thing that we want now is that my sister, my parents' child, comes home, referring to Sasha Ariev, 24. Ariev's sister, 19-year-old IDF soldier Karina Ariev, was taken hostage from her army base. She called us in the morning, and she said the base had been raided and attacked. She basically called to tell us goodbye, and so, if she won't live, she asked us to continue our life. The last message was, "The terrorists, they are here." A few hours later, we identified her in a video. This was a video that the terrorists took and then published on their Telegram channels. This is our last confirmation that she is alive. She is alive on the video, but we don't know what's going on now. We know they probably took her. She was in their Jeep with other girls. We went to the police to show them the video and to say we can identify my sister so they can do something. The same evening, military officers came to our door and they said to us, "My sister, Karina, is held in the hands of a terror organization." From this moment, we do not know any other information. We sit, watch TV, and hope for the best. Our family supports us. Many people from our work, from the school that my sister was in, are sending lots of food. They're very warm. We feel all the Israeli people, you know, they just came together to be one big family, and the only thing that people want now is our hostages to be back, our children to be back. We do not care about bombing Gaza, going on the ground operation. The only thing we want now is that my sister, my parents' child, comes home. She's all I have, you know. I love my parents and all, but she's the one my heart belongs to. She's the only one I love in this world, the only one I want to be with me. She always comforts me. Even though she is my little sister, I can always come to her, and she will be logical with me and make me come together. She's very lovely. She is very innocent. She's very childish, although she is now a teenager. She likes to decorate her room. She likes stickers and the fluffy dolls of the animals. She loves to paint. She loves cosmetics. She's always doing my makeup. I do not understand anything about it. I remember the day she was born because the gap between us is 5 years. I was in the hospital and I saw her. All this life, since the moment she was born till now, is just rolling in my head like a film. Essay, "The World's Job During the War" by Yuval Noah Harari, who is a historian, philosopher, and best-selling author of Sapiens, Homo Deus, and Unstoppable Us. Aviv Kutz, a member of Kibbutz Kfar Azah, was a childhood friend of a very close friend of mine. Aviv and his wife Livnat and their three children have lived in Kfar Azah for years, although the Kutz family endured many Hamas rocket and mortar attacks on their kibbutz, parents and children continued to hope for peace. Every year, the Kutz family organized a kite-flying festival meant to create a small, peaceful space in the war zone. Colorful kites, some displaying peace messages, were flown near the border fence with Gaza. Livnat's sister, who participated in the festival in previous years, said that the idea is to fly the kites near the fence to show Gaza we only want to live in peace. This year's kite festival was planned for October 7. A few hours before it began, Hamas terrorists invaded and occupied the kibbutz. All five members of the Kutz family were slaughtered. The mind boggles at such atrocities. Why do human beings do such things? What did Hamas hope to achieve? Unlike conventional warfare that aims to capture territory, Hamas's terrorism is a form of psychological warfare that aims to spread terror and sow seeds of hatred in the minds of millions, Israelis, Palestinians, and other people throughout the world. Hamas is different from other Palestinian organizations like the PLO and should not be equated with the whole Palestinian people. Since its foundation, Hamas has adamantly refused to recognize Israel's right to exist and has done everything in its power to ruin every chance for peace between Israelis and Palestinians and between Israel and the Arab world. The immediate background to the current cycle of violence is the peace treaties signed between Israel and several Gulf states, and the hoped-for peace treaty between Israel and Saudi Arabia. This treaty was expected not only to normalize relations between Israel and most of the Arab world, but also to somewhat alleviate the sufferings of millions of Palestinians living under Israeli occupation, and to restart the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. Nothing alarms Hamas more than the possibility of peace. This is why it launched its attack, and this is why it murdered the Kutz family and more than 1,000 other Israeli civilians. What Hamas has done is a crime against humanity in the deepest sense of the term. A crime against humanity is not just about killing humans. It is about destroying our trust in humanity. Hamas's crimes cannot be justified by blaming them on past Israeli conduct. Two wrongs do not make a right. There is much to criticize Israel for holding millions of Palestinians for decades under occupation, and for abandoning in recent years any serious attempt to make peace. However, the murder of the Kutz family and the many other atrocities committed by Hamas were not meant to restart the peace process, nor are they likely to end the occupation. Instead, the war Hamas launched inflicts immense suffering on millions of Palestinians. In its war against Hamas, Israel has a duty to defend its territory and its citizens, but it must also defend its humanity. Palestinian civilians deserve to enjoy peace and prosperity in their homeland, and even in the midst of conflict, their basic human rights should be recognized by all sides. This refers not only to Israel, but also to Egypt, which shares a border with the Gaza Strip, and which has partially sealed that border. As for Hamas, it and its supporters should be excommunicated by humanity. The aims of the Gaza war should be clear. Hamas should be totally disarmed and the Gaza Strip should be demilitarized so Palestinian civilians could live dignified lives within it and Israeli civilians could live without fear alongside it. Until these aims are achieved, the struggle to maintain our humanity will be difficult. Most Israelis are psychologically incapable at this moment of empathizing with the Palestinians. The mind is filled to the brim with our own pain, and no space is left to even acknowledge the pain of others. Many of the people who tried to hold such a space, like the Kutz family, are dead or deeply traumatized. Most Palestinians are in an analogous situation. Their minds, too, are so filled with pain they cannot see our pain. But outsiders who are not themselves immersed in pain should make an effort to empathize with all suffering humans, rather than lazily seeing only part of the terrible reality. It is the job of outsiders to help maintain a space for peace. We deposit this peaceful space with you because we cannot hold it right now. Take good care of it for us so one day when the pain begins to heal, both Israelis and Palestinians might inhabit that space. Again, that's an essay by Yuval Noah Harari. This is the view under the caption Health, The Case for Anxiety by David H. Rosmarin, Rosmarin. Anxiety, the very word evokes discomfort. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, half of young American adults deal with it. So it is no wonder this epidemic is causing us so much concern. But as a clinician and researcher, I see a much bigger problem. In our society's quest to be anxiety-free, we tend to miss out on many valuable opportunities presented by this normal human emotion. In and of itself, anxiety is not deadly. Quite the contrary. Being able to feel anxious shows that our fight-or-flight system is operational, which is an indicator of brain and sensory health. Once we accept that anxious arousal is normal, albeit uncomfortable, a part of life, we can use it to thrive. Here are three ways anxiety can help you. It can build your emotional strength and resilience. If you want to build emotional strength and resilience, you need to face some degree of mental adversity. Of course, traumatic events and abuse tend to cause more harm than good, but the experience of and perseverance through occasional anxiety, stress, and tension substantially increases your emotional fortitude. For example, one of the most effective treatments for anxiety is exposure therapy, which involves systematically confronting one's fears head-on in reasonable and increasing doses over time. With the help of a therapist, individuals with phobias to anything from snakes or spiders to heights or medical procedures gradually encounter that which makes them anxious. As they exercise their emotional strength, voluntarily and courageously, they become desensitized to their anxiety, and its effects decrease. In my clinical practice, I have treated hundreds of patients with exposure therapy. And in many instances, individuals emerge not only less phobically anxious, but also with greater resilience in general. In one particularly memorable case, I helped a young woman overcome a severe case of hypochondriasis, anxiety fixated on her health. With this method, years later, when her newborn child had a serious health complication requiring life-saving surgery, she handled the situation with incredible fortitude and calm. It can increase your emotional intimacy and connection. Humans are social creatures. The number one predictor of happiness and flourishing in late life is not great genes, financial success, or fame. It is the quality of our relationships. Clinical science has identified that sharing our anxieties with our loved ones is one of the most effective strategies to build connection. When my patients learn to open up and share their anxieties with their partners, they almost always report a greater sense of emotional intimacy. Even in the most secure relationships, we naturally feel some anxiety, sometimes, about whether the love we receive is truly unconditional. As relationship expert Sue Johnson teaches, when we embrace and express our need for connection during challenging moments, that is, I'm having a hard time right now and could really use your support, it begets greater connection and turns our anxiety into love. It can help you recalibrate and rebalance. From time to time, all of us find ourselves at the end of our rope. Our responsibilities pile up, our resources break down, and we just do not have enough time to get everything done. We feel uncomfortably anxious most, if not all, of the time. Many times, when my patients are overwhelmed, they tend to take on more demands. Ironically, they take on additional projects at work, volunteer for community service, provide additional support to their friends. It is easier to avoid thinking about how overwhelmed we feel and pretend everything is okay when we are focused on work. But working harder, faster, and longer hours when one is already ragged can create chronic stress, which has been associated with heart disease, cancer, and stroke, as well as numerous less severe medical conditions. When we feel genuinely overwhelmed and anxious because of stress, it is our body's way of telling us to recalibrate and rebalance. Nobody is truly limitless. When we heed our internal cues and acknowledge our fallibility, we emerge more focused and healthier overall, and also less stressed and anxious. Anxiety can be a healthy, helpful emotion that is a constructive aspect of human life. It can foster emotional connection when we convey our vulnerable feelings to others. And in the form of stress, it can serve as an internal barometer to remain balanced and healthy. It is about time we start putting it to good use. The author, David H. Rossmarin, is a professor at Harvard Medical School and author of Thriving with Anxiety, 9 Tools to Make Your Anxiety Work for You. From the View World, The Risk Report by Ion Bremmer, a boost for Poland's democracy and the EU. In Poland, an unexpected surge of voters ready for change has ousted a populist coalition government in favor of a pro-EU, more moderate group of leaders. The Law and Justice Party in power since 2015 won the most parliamentary seats, but its coalition partners did not perform well enough to allow current Prime Minister Jarosław Kaczyński to form another government. It is a striking win for politician Donald Tusk, T-U-S-K, and his civic coalition. It is also great news for the European Union, which can expect a new government in Warsaw that will respect EU rules on democracy and rule of law. The biggest surprise on election day was a turnout estimated at 73%, the highest figure in post-communist Poland's history. It is a result all the more striking given Kaczynski's unapologetic use of state media to boost his party's support. Once in place, Poland's new government will work on making the changes its leaders have promised and the EU has called for. In particular, it will move to restore the political independence of the judiciary and media in line with EU rules. These reforms, in turn, will help Poland access as much as possible of the 35 billion euros that Poland can claim as part of the so-called Recovery and Resilience Facility, money Brussels set aside for member states to help with pandemic recovery, and the EU's ambitious green and digital transition plans. The EU withheld that money from the previous government in response to its bid to bring judges and journalists under government control. Hungary would, for the past several years, a populist government in Warsaw has boosted its popularity by demonizing the Union, its rules on democracy, and its social policy. It has turned state media outlets into a tool of government propaganda and stacked the country's courts with political cronies. It did all this secure in the knowledge that EU punishment depended on unanimous support and that its ally in Hungary would veto any punishment. The EU has withheld badly needed funds to pressure Poland's government for change. But that strategy was undercut by the need to help Poland absorb Ukrainian refugees following Russia's invasion in February 2022. It is no wonder, then, Brussels is delighted to see Poland's voters eject that government and replace it with one that will be led by Tusk, a former head of the European Council. This political shift in Poland is especially timely for the EU, given a recent election victory for populists in Slovakia and strong poll numbers for populist parties in Germany, France, and Austria. Caveats apply. President Andrzej Duda, a former Law and Justice member of Parliament, will first invite the current ruling coalition to try to assemble a new government. That effort will fail, but it will take weeks to do so. Only then will Duda give the victorious opposition alliance its turn, meaning it is unlikely to have a government in place before December. Even then, Kaczynski's Law and Justice Party will hold enough parliamentary seats to limit the new government's options, and both President Duda and conservative judges on Poland's top court will create obstacles, too. Finally, the new governing coalition will have internal divisions as well, particularly on social policy questions like abortion restrictions and the political influence of the Catholic Church. The civic coalition must contend with both the Third Way's moderate conservatives and some progressive hardliners in the left. The leaders of this new coalition will also face tough economic conditions, including low growth, high inflation, and a debt problem made more complicated by its plans to keep some of the more generous social benefits offered by the outgoing populist government. But for Poland's winning alliance and its fans in Brussels, these are problems for another day. For now, a major source of division between the EU and one of its biggest member states is on its way out, thanks to an unexpectedly large surge of Poland's voters. Under the heading World, Seeing Gaza, photojournalist Saher Al-Ghoura documents destruction and grief in his city, by Song Suk Sylvia Kang. This is an almost half-page color photo on the front page of this article. It's dark, but there is an orangey tint to this dark sky in at least one direction that I would call northeast, but I don't know what the orientation of the camera is. The caption reads, "Plumes of smoke fill the sky from airstrikes in Gaza City, October 7." Indeed, one building, a multi-storied building, appears to be on fire with extremely high twice at the height of the building, plumes of smoke, dark, gray, black, orangey color, just like that sunset or evening sky with the orange reflecting onto it. This particular building that is a fire is surrounded by other multi-story buildings and some lower sized buildings as well. Another photo that's included in this article, which is about half a page or more in color. The background's off-white to gray to tan. It's Omer Lafi grieves October 9 by the body of his nephew, who was killed by an airstrike. The man is hovering over cloths that are bloody. Saher El-Ghoura has long loved to document both the beauty and the challenges of life in Gaza. That's what first drove the 27-year-old Gaza native to become a photojournalist. But even El-Ghoura, who's already lived through the devastating 2008 and 2014 Gaza-Israel conflicts, was not prepared for what has transpired this month, which would have been last month. The humanitarian situation here is extremely catastrophic, El-Ghoura, A-L-G-H-O-R-R-A, tells Time. Hamas launched a surprise attack October 7 that killed at least 1,400 people in Israel. Gazans have been subject to thousands of airstrikes since then, and Israel imposed a total siege, cutting off electricity, water, food, and medicine, on top of a 16-year blockade that already left most Gazans reliant on aid. More than 3,300 people have died in Gaza in this latest escalation, and more than 13,000 have been wounded, the Palestinian health minister said October 18. Child casualties make up a quarter of the total, Gaza authorities told Reuters, and El-Ghoura's photos put those numbers in stark relief. In one, Omer Lafi mourns the loss of his nephew, with whom he was inside a market buying food when the nearby Al-Suzi Mosque in Gaza's Al-Shati refugee camp, set up in 1948, was hit by an airstrike. On a separate occasion, El-Ghoura recalls he saw a father holding his daughter near Al-Shifa Hospital, exclaiming he was planning to throw her a birthday party before she was killed by an airstrike. At least 700 children have died in Gaza since the Israel-Hamas war broke out. To grasp how deadly the conflict has been so far for Gaza's children, more children were killed in Gaza during the first 9 days of this war than in 20 months of Russia's war in Ukraine. And those who live have not escaped the trauma. El-Ghoura recalls meeting two children at the emergency room at Al-Quds Hospital who lost their father while escaping airstrikes. They sat there crying. We tried to help find him, he says. El-Ghoura followed them until they finally found the man injured in a different part of the hospital. They hugged each other and collapsed in tears. El-Ghoura's photographs show the many ways Israeli airstrikes continue to overwhelm the 2.2 million Palestinians living in what is one of the world's most densely populated places. Families grieve next to lifeless bodies. Plumes of smoke fill the sky. Rubble fills the streets. A mother injured after her house was hit by an airstrike the morning of October 9 cries as she learns her daughter died. Patients inundate Al-Shifa, the city's largest medical complex, as thousands more seek shelter there. Homes are destroyed every day. We see sadness and frustrations in the eyes of the citizens who lose their loved ones during the war, El-Ghoura says. There are families that have perished entirely. Amid the scale of death and destruction, health officials have resorted to storing bodies in ice cream freezer trucks as cemeteries fill up and moving them to hospitals becomes too risky. The health situation is at risk of collapse, Al-Ghora says. His photographs from Al-Shifa illustrate the urgency on the ground. There were emotionally difficult scenes that took a toll on us, he says. It is a difficult feeling, and the smell is not good. I went to the Shifa hospital to capture images of suffering and sadness there. And all the sounds were chants and ululations. There were many sounds of crying and screaming. The hospital has warned there's nowhere else for patients to go. It is absolutely impossible to evacuate the hospital, Dr. Muhammad Abu Salima, director of the hospital, told the New York Times. If someone does not die from the bombardment, then he'll die from the lack of medical service. Israel, on October 13, ordered the evacuation of more than 1 million Palestinians from northern to southern Gaza ahead of an expected ground offensive. Israel says the order, which the UN has said is impossible to carry out, is meant to protect civilian lives. But the UN and others have warned it would cause a humanitarian disaster. The war has also been deadly for those documenting it. At least 17 journalists have been killed since the conflict broke out. Even so, Al-Ghora remains determined to continue his work. We're all at risk here, but we follow safety guidelines regardless. This includes wearing press vests and moving cautiously based on our assessment of dangerous areas, he says, showing Time his press attire. Photography is very important for documenting crucial moments, he says. In this war, our role as photojournalists is to show the world what the Palestinian people are going through. Now I shall embark upon a long list of what Time magazine calls Best Inventions 2023. Parenting, an on-the-go bottle warmer, Ember Baby Bottle System, written by Jessica Klein. Heating breast milk or formula for babies is notoriously tricky. They prefer it warmed, but their sensitive mouths can be easily scalded. Placing a full bottle in hot water is the most common method, but it's nearly impossible to do on the go. Ember's system avoids danger and headache with sleek, BPA-compliant bottles that attach to magnetized pucks, which safely and evenly heat the bottles, are fully portable, and can be controlled via an app. The bottle's removable dome, sort of like a thermos, maintains temperature for four-hour stretches. Food and drink, crunchy convenience, Kraft Heinz 360 Crisp. Microwaved food is convenient, but not as satisfying as fresh-cooked fare. Kraft Heinz has a solution. The 360 Crisp process, which debuted with a new product, Lunchables Grilled Cheesies. The sandwich comes in a paperboard container with a susceptor that, when microwaved, directs heat to all the right places, leaving no bite undercooked or singed. You have that perfectly crispy outside, that gooey, melty inside, and none of the sogginess or dryness, says Alan Kleinerman, Vice President of Disruption. Medical Care, Visible Cancer, by Jeremy Gantz. Scission, Vision, Envision. Today's standard of care for finding lymph nodes through which cancer spread is not quite high-tech. Clinicians examine samples of body tissue by hand. That's changing with Envision, a first-of-its-kind microscope that uses short-wave infrared technology to show lymph nodes contrasted against surrounding fat tissue. By enabling more accurate cancer staging, the tool could save lives. You end up with more suitable treatment plans, says Jeremy Lee, CEO and co-founder of Cision Vision, which launched InVision in April. By the way, Cision is spelled C-I-S-I-O-N. It's already in major hospital systems across the country, including Stanford and Northwestern. Beauty. A More Strategic Straightener by Dyson Airstraight. Hair straighteners have been a part of beauty routines since their invention in 1909, but they require dry hair. The hot irons can burn skin, and the devices weaken a locks over the long run. Dyson, D-Y-S-O-N, has hit on a 21st century solution, the Air Straight. The straightener, used with wet hair, blows 11.9 liters of hot air a second through 1.5 millimeter slots at a 45 degree angle, speeding up the process while preventing the sort of damage created by scorching hot irons. The machine's powered by the company's hyperdimium motor. It's more than 100,000 RPM, faster than an F1 engine, says Lo Chen Niao, senior design engineer at Dyson. Chris Stokel Walker wrote that column. Turning the page. Household Command Center, Amazon Echo Hub, again by Chris Stokel Walker. Smart homes are getting smarter, but that means a raft of apps and a tangle of cables. Thus, the forthcoming Amazon Echo Hub, the retail giant's first Alexa-enabled smart home control panel. Talk to or tap the 8-inch screen to manage all your smart home devices. It is compatible with over 140,000 gadgets, even ones from other manufacturers. Millions of our customers have more than 20 devices connected to Alexa, says Melissa Cha, Vice President of Smart Home at Amazon. And we want to make it as easy as possible to manage and control those devices in a single place. Consumer electronics, safety on the job. Birdie Plus Enterprise. One in three women experiences sexual or physical violence in their lifetime. That sobering statistic is a motivator for She's Birdie, the company behind Birdie Plus, a popular personal safety alarm on a keychain that features a button users can tap to receive emergency assistance and a small handle they can pull to trigger a siren. In 2022, Goop became the first outside retailer to carry Birdie Plus, and in October, She's Birdie expanded its reach with Birdie Plus Enterprise, a partnership program with businesses in industries like realty, whose employees tend to meet clients alone. Reuse and recycle, cut kitchen waste. WNP reusable stretch wrap. Plastic wrap and aluminum foil are fantastic kitchen aids, but people generally use each piece just once before tossing it in the trash. Now, home chefs can cut down on waste by replacing them with W&P's silicon stretch wrap. At just 3 millimeters, it is about as thin as silicon can be without tearing. The reusable wrap can cover a casserole dish or stretch around a cheese block, and W&P says it is safe to put in the oven, microwave, dishwasher, and freezer. The product, says Kate Lubineski, president of W&P, is designed to be a workhorse in the kitchen. Experimental, the drive to fly. Aleph, A-L-E-F, Aeronautics Model A. This short column by Alejandro de la Garza. Plenty of startups are working on the sci-fi dream of flying cars, but not many look like, well, a car. We started calling everything a flying car, and that was wrong, says Jim Duchovny, co-founder and CEO of Aleph Aeronautics. The company's Model A, a two-seat, all-electric vehicle with a flight range of 110 miles, indeed looks made to be parked in a garage. In July, the Federal Aviation Administration gave the vehicle a special airworthy certificate, allowing Aleph to make test flights. The company hopes to deliver the first Model A's by 2026. Outdoors, this is by Jeff Wilser, Boosted Mountain Biking, Trek, Fuel, EXE 2023. Mountain bikes make for awkward e-bikes. If you're climbing uphill and turning the bike to avoid rocks or trees, for example, pressing the electronic burst can be scary or even dangerous. So Trek built a new engine for its Fuel EXE electric mountain bike that provides smoother and more granular e-boosts. It's also quieter, lighter, and 20% smaller than a typical e-bike motor. The Fuel EXE looks, feels, and sounds like a traditional mountain bike, so you don't even have to tell your friends you're getting a boost. Household Cleaner H2O Life Straw Max. More than a million people die each year from unsafe drinking water, often in conflict zones or after natural disasters. To address this, LifeStraw invented a solution that strips water of bacteria, parasites, and viruses at scale. Its compact 16-pound system attaches to an existing water supply, cleaning 40 gallons of water an hour using hollow fiber filters that block anything larger than 20 nanometers from passing through. We wanted something that could work both at a refugee camp level, but also where you have flooding and wildfires, says Chief Brand Officer Tara Lundy. Apps and Software, an e-passport, digital travel credentials by Pranav Dixit. Plane tickets, loyalty cards, and more have moved from wallets to cell phones, but one key document has not, the passport, unless you're in Finland. In August, it began the world's first digital passport program for Finnish citizens flying on the national carrier Finnair between Finland and London, Manchester, England, or Edinburgh. To qualify to use the app, people must register with their local police, have their photograph taken, and sign a consent form. But once onboarded, all travelers have to do is get their phone scanned at airport immigration, and the fear of losing their one paper passport is gone. Reuse and Recycle Robotic Recycling, AMP Robotics. Cortex C by Jeremy Gantz. Recycling rates have been stagnant for years. One big reason? Properly sorting crowded conveyor belts covered in a grimy array of glass, metal, and plastic is tricky and labor-intensive. AMP Robotics has a solution. The Cortex C, a compact and adaptable robot for recycling facilities. Paired with AMP's AI-backed computer vision system, it can correctly identify, say, a specific strawberry company's plastic clamshell. What's powerful about AI is its ability to handle ambiguity and imprecision, says CEO Matanya Horowitz. The robot's speed and accuracy could also lower sorting costs. Accessibility, Smoother Moves, Zine, Z-E-E-N, by Jeff Wilser. Each year, tens of thousands of people in the U.S. go to the emergency room after falling using walkers and canes. The Zine was designed to be a safer walker, using a gas spring technology that inventor Garrett Brown developed when creating the Steadicam movie camera stabilizer in the 1970s. It allows users to smoothly move the chair up and down so they can more easily shift between walking, standing, and sitting modes. There was something missing between walkers and wheelchairs, says Brown, co-founder and CEO of Zine maker Exokinetics. He believes the Zine fills that void. Parenting Lifesaver Doona, D-O-O-N-A, Sense Alert by Leslie Dickstein. In the U.S., about 40 children die each year because they're left alone in a hot car. It's an extra risk for babies in rear-facing car seats because they're not visible to the driver. Sense Alert, a removable car seat insert by car seat maker Doona, uses sensors to detect the presence of a child to help prevent tragedy. New to the U.S. market, it automatically connects to smartphones via Bluetooth and triggers 3 incremental alerts if a child is unattended in the car. Sustaining the Chill, Reuse and Recycle Cruise, C-R-U-Z, Cool. Styrofoam takes over 500 years to decompose, yet we still use it for insulation. The Cruise Cool Cooler, which can insulate frozen foods for 48 hours, is made out of chitin, a polymer that is found in fungi, insects, and shrimp. But the real difference is how it's produced. Typically, eco-friendly alternatives to styrofoam come in odd shapes and sizes that flummox supply chains. Parent company Cruise Foam pounds the chitin, C-H-I-T-I-N, into large flat pellets that snap into a partner's current processing plant. That is how Cruise Foam is already partnering with Atlantic Packaging, an industry leader. We have run out of time for today's episode of Time Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Patricia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Today's program is underwritten by G. Suggs Insurance. Please contact G. Suggs Insurance, your local independent agency, for trusted advice on home, auto, business, and life insurance. For more information, please visit gsuggsinsurance.com or call 919-875-8889. Time Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.